Today we're going to be talking about camping.
Oh yeah. Getting out in good old nature with none of the amenities of the house.
Well, some of the amenities.
Wait, you guys have a house?
Right?
No.
That's nice, man.
That's actually a fair point. I think it would be good for the listeners to know that I live full time in an RV.
Right? And he's not lying. It's a very beautiful RV. Makes you want to get one myself and live in it. Be a lot cheaper than what I pay in rent.
Yeah.
I have a house.
Yeah.
It has Lowe's written on the side of it.
Is it Amazon? Is it Amazon? Is it a box?
No, it's not an Amazon box. It's not 2-day shipping.
Dude, have you seen those Amazon houses you can buy for like 20?
Yes, yeah. The one you sent me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's literally like a Connex box, but with glass patio windows on either side. It's insane.
What about getting one and making it a hunting blind?
That's a heck of a hunting blind.
Why not, man? You only live once and you don't take your money with you when you go anyway, so why not enjoy it?
Dude, have you seen the new...
You're not going to go very far with spending your money like that.
Yes, sir.
Or you can go to Allseason and look at their big mega blind. It's literally a house with like 30 shooting windows. It's insane.
Does it float on water? Does it have a pontoon option?
It could with a little bit of engineering.
Well, hey, I'll make the world's best hunt blind then.
So, Spencer, you're essentially the one that kind of got me the camping bug with your numerous totes pre-ready to go and rolling out, man. So I think you should be the one to kind of kick us into this.
Oh, that's terrifying, having me as the leader. But yeah, so I guess I don't really know how to start this. So yes, I like to camp. I grew up camping. My wife, it turns out, likes to camp probably more than she likes to be in the house. But yeah, so over the years, I've kind of accumulated and accrued a lot of camping gear and kind of refined my system fairly well. It always seems to be a bit chaotic no matter what when I get out to the campsite. But yes, as you mentioned, I'm a big tote guy. I've got, at least 30 of the, hardware store black and yellow totes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all categorized and they're all up nice and neat on a, I've got one of those tote organizer things I built out of 2x4s in my garage. And so I just pick the ones I want for whatever kind of trip I'm doing, and I just throw them in the truck and go. So I've got one for camp kitchen, I've got my tents in one, and I've got about four of them for my camp kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just open them up and go. And then usually when I get back about 3 days later, after I'm done camping, I'll kind of go through them again and get them ready for the next trip.
Got you. So on the topic of camping, I kind of talked to you guys on the phone about this earlier, but I learned a new one today that I think is kind of funny because they actually consider it camping, and that's glamping.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
glamping. Glamping. Glamour camping.
Yep. Look it up, man. It's a legitimate thing. And I learned about it today. But essentially, it's you go to a lot of people here in the hill country have them now. So I actually Googled it and I was really curious. There's like two in Wimberley. There's one over there more than one over by Fredericksburg. But essentially, they're little mini cabins or tents that are just preset on a person's piece of property. Got all the amenities, got the heating, AC, all that stuff. And you go and stay the night in there. They call it glamping.
Oh, hell no. Hey, hey, camping.
Yeah, where's your mat and your rocks? Your rock is a pillow. That's real camping.
Yes, sir. Don't forget to find
my age.
Oh, man. I think it's funny that we lasted maybe two weekends this past hunting season actually camping with tents before Bob Lilly went and bought a camper.
Yeah. Bob is not built for camping.
No, he said he spent enough time in fighting holes that he deserves to have the finer things in life.
Yeah, that's fair. I get
No, I still prefer my foxhole and a rock and a woobie.
Yeah.
Hey, and you just have fun with that.
I will.
And good luck digging a hole out at my piece of property. It is a little difficult in doing that.
Hey, that's what dynamite's for, my man.
Oh, that's what you would need, dude. That's
and
what
no,
you need.
I don't have any, just to clear the air, just say
yet.
No.
Tannerite. Man's got Tannerite. It works.
So yeah, it'd be a little bit difficult out at your place since it's all rock.
Yeah.
But you might end up, if you did kind of blast your way through the rock, you might end up in one of the caverns underneath the rock.
Yep. Texas Hill Country is known really for its cool caverns.
Yeah, that could either be really cool or really bad.
Yeah. So I think getting into this, guys, like we did with the fishing, is where would someone who really hasn't done it or maybe is a novice to it, where would they go to even start?
I tell you YouTube, but I think that's going to be a bad piece of advice because everyone's going to be like, oh, no, that, what do you call it, glamping? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Buy an RV, go to a hookup, voila. No, that's not camping.
All right, Billy. So what is camping, my friend? Let the viewers know camping, what is Billy Newland's viewpoint on camping.
Camping is roughing it, son. Get a tent, get a sleeping bag. You know, okay, yeah, take a few dry freeze foods, whatever. But take a fishing pole, man. Go fish a stream, catch your own food. Cook over a fire that you got to go, you know, chop some oak limbs up or whatever. You know, roughing it. That's camping, not hooking up to an RV and, ooh, look, I got a nice fluffy king size bed.
I have a king and a queen size bed.
Oh, so you bougie. You are bougie.
Heck yeah.
Oh, it's even more bougie. His back end's a toy hauler, bro.
Oh, you want
He's got the really nice camper.
You're one of them guys.
Yeah, it's got the 6-foot by 10-foot fold down patio on the side, too, with the double glass doors.
God.
Yeah. And I'm getting ready to redo my shower in there, make it bigger.
Wow.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I got 9-foot ceilings, extended season. So, you know, it's comfortable in the winter and the summer. Got two air conditioners. I got two air conditioners on there. Oh, yeah. That's the way to do it.
Shame.
No, I do like roughing it, though. But I have to have some creature comforts. I can't do the sleeping bag anymore. I at least have to have a cot.
Like I said,
if it's really cold, I'm bringing my buddy heater, my little propane heater. I don't like being cold. I can't do it anymore. Well, I guess I can. I just don't want to.
You know, funny story about the whole heater thing is you and I hunting back in 2021? Yeah, it was 2021 at my place when that front blew in.
Oh, man.
So Spencer and I, for y'all that are listening, went to bed that night, maybe
it was comfortable.
It was comfortable weather. And we woke up to, one, our tent about to blow over. The only thing that stopped is the fact that our bodies were in it. And the temperature dropped by, what was it, 35 degrees? It got all the way down into the 30s with winds at 25 miles per hour. It was cold. Super cold.
I think it was below freezing when we woke up. And it was just, like you said, it was crazy windy. And out there, we are still camping in the quarry where there's nothing to block the wind.
No. Absolutely nothing. Brutal. Which is funny because we tried a new location on the property because of that. And we actually didn't like it because there was no breeze. So we went back to the quarry.
Yeah, right. It's too hot the next year.
Yeah. Oh, it was really hot this year. This year was I think the coldest it got was maybe in the 40s, low 40s, I think one time. But in reality, it did not get very cold.
No, it did not. But yeah, I only went out there early November. I don't think I ever went back out there this year.
No. Yeah.
So I was still hot weather prepared. And I still brought my heater.
Yep.
And I was comfortable and I liked it.
Oh, yeah. No, I came in handy I think the second trip you came out for opening weekend.
Yep.
Yeah, because you and I had the one set up and then Devin and Bob had the other tent. We had to bring both our tents, which you and I both rocked the Camp Pro CPs, which I personally really enjoyed because not only are they 3-bedroom, but I like the fact that the entire ceiling is a net. So during the spring and summer, if you wanted to actually see all the stars, you could see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I was able to introduce you to that tent.
Oh, dude, I love that tent. I bought it after the first time. So for y'all that are listening, the majority of the time I would wake up and my family's home that I grew up in about an hour away from my grandmother's property. And I would wake up super early to drive out there and hunt every day. Spencer was the one that was like, nah, dude, I got this tent. We'll go out there. We'll spend the whole time, save some money, buy food. And That's where I gave him the nickname Camp Chef, because that man was really treating me some of the best meals out on the property. And I literally just took photos of everything he had, duplicated it, and I have that literally the same thing in my garage.
I told you, I've been dialing this in for years.
Oh, yeah.
I've got the Magellan camp kitchen set up with, like, it folds up to, like, probably, what, 30 inches wide?
And if that.
8 inches tall, 4 inches wide. Got a little handle on it. It's fantastic. But it folds out, and it's got two big platforms for you to put stuff on. It's got racks for you to set, you know, hot dishes and all kinds of things like that. And, you know, paper towels and utensils. And it's got a big light pole on it. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So I put my Coleman two burner stove, classic, on there. And yeah, I can make some food on that thing. But of course, now I carry those white plastic foldable tables. I keep about two or three of those in the truck, mm-hmm. just because I'm typically cooking for more people now.
Oh yeah, man, you've earned the title Camp Chef when you're in town, dude. It's already there. Spencer's got it all. But I know we've all spent our fair share of camping. You know, I know for you is more of a hobby. For Billy and I, being both prior service, it was sometimes a requirement, not necessarily we wanted to do it. Whether we were in the two-man tent or straight up on the ground or trying to survive the heat of Africa on top of a tank, you know, either way, we were out there underneath the stars most of the time with the big old pterodactyl mosquitoes, which are every camper's worst nightmare.
See, I didn't have those in Iraq, and I didn't have them in Syria. The only thing we had to battle over there was the camel spiders.
Yep, good old spiders.
And then occasionally a jackal.
But as far as shelters, man, I mean, obviously we went from, you know, from tents to not even having a tent, all the way up to, you know, the bougie thing now called glamping. But for getting out there and kind of trying to get one with the elements as best you can with the basic necessities, like when y'all go and obviously, Spencer, when you found the Campro CP, like what were you looking for in that tent? Was there certain things you wanted it to have?
Yeah, so I had just gotten married, and my wife and I, we had camped a few times together, and she's an only child and very close with her parents. And so they came camping with us a couple of times. And so we were looking for something that had a little bit more room. And that thing's, what, 14 feet by 9 feet with like a 6.5-foot ceiling on it. So, and like you said, it's got dividers so you can kind of break it up into rooms. And so we just wanted something we could kind of fit everyone in instead of setting up two or three different tents. Mm-hmm. And we really like it. We've used the crap out of it for years before that. I rocked a cheap like Walmart tent, and I probably had that thing for 20 years now. And I still use it when I don't want to take a bunch of stuff. Like if I'm going out and backpacking or I just want to pack light, I'll still pack that thing, and I can set that thing up in about 3.5 minutes because I've set it up so many times.
Oh yeah.
But even that Camp Pros one, I mean, it's big, but we could still set those up in what, probably 6-7 minutes.
I mean, you did beat both of my teenage kids setting them up this last trip.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I need to, my bungee broke on the top pole. So I need to re-bungee it.
Yeah, rebudget.
Trying to hold it together when you're trying to thread it through. It's a pain.
So, Billy, have you got yourself a tent yet or not?
Man.
He likes to rough it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I rough it. I just sleep under a tree now. So, I actually have, because usually it's just me. And when I do my camping and stuff, it's usually when I'm out hunting. Because I like to go, whether it's mountain hunting or, you know, depending on where I'm going. I have it's a Colby mm-hmm. tent, you know, Walmart special. It's big enough for me to, you know, get the bow case in there and have plenty of room for that. Sleeping bags, plural, depending on time of year, I'll double them up, stuff on
this idea.
Especially when I was hunting in Washington State, especially up there in the middle of winter, you know, I was doubling up on sleeping bags. But, you know, I take a small tote that's got some, you know, freeze-dried foods and stuff in there and some water and whatnot. But yeah, I just rock a little 4-man Coleman tent from Walmart and my hunting gear, you know, I got chairs and whatnot to go with me and stuff. But it's spacious enough for me to keep all my gear in and whatnot. So,
what are you using for a chair?
It is one of those real nice cushion swivel chairs from, can't remember the store that I got it from, but it's real nice. Good cushion in it, swivel. So
I've got one of the ones. It's a fold out like director's chair style. Mm-hmm. And it's got the fold out table on the right side, and the left side folds out with the little built in soft cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that for dove hunting 1 year because, you know, dove hunting in Texas, it's typically pretty warm still. And so
September's hot.
Yeah, I could put a couple of cold waters and Gatorades or whatever in there, and I could be out there for quite a while without feeling too miserable.
Yeah. Nah, for all y'all listening out there, when it really comes down to looking at tents, there are so many options, and they're very not, there's no, like, I guess you would say right or wrong with a good tent. Just make sure you find one that can obviously fit you comfortably, and make sure you find one that actually has the ability to be bug resistant and water resistant, because you will experience the elements, especially in the springtime, which we are in. Pretty sure all y'all have been seeing the weather, bunch of tornadoes and all kinds of stuff going on in the world today. And
we had 4 inches of rain last night in about 5 hours.
Oh man, we got a bunch for like first thing this morning for about 30 minutes and then it was gone.
Yeah,
typical San Antonio down here.
Yep. But yeah, sleeping in a wet tent is miserable.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Oh,
so yeah, so I actually hear the rain has been horrible. I mean, just over the last 2 months, I mean, Western PA has essentially just been a flood. Like, it's just horrible.
Yeah, so I actually bought on Amazon because I've used my tent so much, the waterproofing does wear out after a while. So you can buy like the cans, like the spray cans at Walmart or wherever. But I actually went and bought a gallon of waterproofing, and I've been using that for like 3 years, and every third time I use my tent, I'll just spray it down again just to keep it nice and waterproof, because I slept in a wet tent when it was about 35 degrees outside, and I will never do that again. There's nothing worse, especially if the wind's blowing.
I know before we started the podcast today, Spence and I were talking about the one time that my ex-wife and I went camping and deer hunting during November. And on the last day of the hunt, that morning, we knew a front was coming in. They're calling for a chance of rain. They weren't saying how heavy or how light, but they were just calling for rain. So we made sure to have the tarp put over the top of it, you know, to protect it from rain getting in. And the wind was so bad, it pushed the tent wall far enough over to kind of create a bowl on top of the cot on the inside. And the water just filled up, and I don't care how good your tent's waterproof, water eventually will find the weakest point, and it's saturated. Sleeping bags were turning into sponges. We immediately had to wrap up and leave. It was so bad.
Yeah. That you did bring up a good point though. If you know you're going to be camping in like heavy rain, bring a tarp and just throw it over the tent. You lose some of your breathability, but it's worth it to stay dry.
Oh yeah.
And also, if you can, put a tarp underneath your tent, and that's going to keep the dew in the morning from coming up through the bottom of your tent and soaking everything that's on the floor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, tents are pretty simple. The only thing I would say is, like, if you're way up north and you're going to be camping and it's freezing cold, maybe look at getting a four-season tent. So most tents are kind of three-season, which means they can basically stand up to a little bit of wind and a little bit of rain. Four-season tents, they're built to withstand the elements, and pretty severe elements. So if you're going to be camping in more of an extreme environment, do a little bit of research, probably look into getting a four-season tent or getting something like a tarp to throw over it and or under it.
Yeah.
Because if it's cold and rainy and especially windy, a lot of the tents that you're going to find at your basic stores, wherever you go buy your gear, these basic tents aren't made to withstand 70-mile-an-hour winds and 3 inches of rain. There are limits, but they can put up to a lot of abuse.
Oh yeah, but I know Spencer, you kind of hit on this earlier about your little outdoor kitchen, and I know Billy, you hinted on this that you just like take the good old already prepared food. Spencer, what do you run? Like, what is your kitchen of choice for the outdoors?
So, like I said, for my kitchen, I use a Magellan Outdoors camp kitchen. I bought it at Academy. It's a nice fold out deal. And then I have a bunch of tables that I bring as well, because I typically am cooking for multiple people. As far as dishes and cookware goes, I love my cast iron. I'm a Lodge guy. Pretty much everything I have is Lodge, unless it was given to me.
Hey, Lodge, if you're listening, you should totally sponsor us.
Yeah, send us free stuff.
Right? Dude, I love Lodge, man. I love that cast iron. That little Dutch oven of yours. Dude, that thing is so sweet.
I was just about to say, they're pretty much indestructible, but actually this last year at your place, I broke the lid to my Dutch oven.
Mm-hmm.
But it was. I mean, that thing's 40 years old, and it's seen a lot of heat and a lot of fire. And
oh, yeah.
It was the old aluminum top, so yep. It was bound to break sometime. But the cast iron is pretty much indestructible.
Yep.
As far as, like, if I'm making coffee or I want to cook something quick, I really love the Stanley Adventure cookware. It's stainless steel, it's lightweight, and it's nesting. So I have my coffee pot, and it has two cups in there, and it's got a couple of spoons and stuff like that, and it's got a lid. And then I've got my bigger one, which I can make, you know, soups or chili or whatever. And it nests, I think, four bowls and four spoons. And so those are fantastic. I love those for just throwing on the grill and just making something really quick.
Yeah. And folks, if you don't have a coffee pot or a percolator out there with you when you're camping, there's something wrong with you. You gotta have the coffee.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about coffee. What is your coffee style of choice? Are you a pour over coffee guy? Are you a percolator guy? Or are you like me? Have you switched over to the instant coffee?
So I've done both. So you have got me onto the instant coffee, especially that Starbucks. What was it, Pipe Creek or what was that brew that Medium Roasty used?
I think it was just their house roast.
That one was pretty good. Instant coffee kind of comes in clutch, especially when you forget about the time change and you're getting up and you should have been up an hour early. Spencer knows what I'm getting at here.
Yep. Made that mistake last year. We all did.
Right? But no, I actually like to really use my Stanley percolator. That's probably my favorite, just because it's fun. You know, the kids enjoy it because it's got the little sight glass up on top and kind of teaches them, because instant coffee, just pour it in, you're done. And like with my kids, what comes in handy is the little Stanley little pot that you were talking about, a little two cup Stanley cup, because my youngest doesn't drink coffee. He really likes his green tea. So you can quickly heat up the water on a little portable propane burner or right on the campfire on the coals. And then he can put his tea in there and have his morning drink of choice.
Yeah. Thankfully, instant coffee's really come a long way in the past couple of years. I mean, pretty much every coffee, well, not every, but a lot of coffee companies out there have an instant coffee now. And so you can get all kinds of really good stuff. Whereas before it was like you had the cheap Folgers stuff, and that was pretty much your only option. And the last couple of years, it's really come a long way. And that's really helpful, because especially when the mornings are really cold, I don't want to get out there and wait 30 minutes for the fire to get going and for everything to start heating up. I want to be able to throw two cups of water in my little Stanley, heat it up in about 4 or 5 minutes, and have me a cup of coffee first thing. And then I can kind of get my day going.
Oh, yeah, dude. And it's funny you bring up the
warm fluids first thing in the morning. That's a must when it's cold.
Yep. Dude, I'm not going to lie, dude. I can even drink hot coffee in the summer. It's just first thing in the morning, man. You got to have your cup of Joe.
Yeah. And so that brings me to my next question is, what do you like to put in your coffee? Do you like the black coffee, or do you like the coffee and eggnog that I kind of turned you on to a couple of years ago?
The coffee and eggnog is pretty good, but the way I've been drinking it, and I kind of get made fun of, because still a lot of people, even now, especially the younger generation, cannot stand the taste of black coffee. And I had to train myself, because, you know, getting really big into physical fitness and everything, trying to limit the amount of sugar I intake. I really enjoy it now black with a little bit of honey. And that is my way to drink coffee now. So just black with a little bit of honey.
Honey is great on hunting trips because it's just easy and it's really versatile. And I like it better than just, you know, processed sugar. It has a little bit more flavor to it. and it's just better in my opinion.
Oh yeah, dude. But no, this sometimes, man, I'm just in the mood to drink that good old black gold, man. You know, I'm just drinking black.
Yeah, if you can get some good coffee, then drinking it black's really nice sometimes. What do you think, Billy? You've been kind of quiet over there.
Hey, I'm just listening, man. But
he's taking notes, people. See, even he wants to learn.
Yeah, I'm taking notes. No, I'm an instant coffee guy. Like I say, a lot of my camping's done during hunting season just because I like to get out deep in the backcountry. The instant coffee, man, that's kind of where it's at for me because, like Spencer, I don't want to wait 30 minutes, you know, if I'm out going to chase elk or I'm going to chase blacktail or something in the backcountry. I want to be able to get up, heat it up, throw it in a cup, throw it in a pack, and just boogie. And usually I'll take sugar cubes. I'll throw a couple sugar cubes in there, and I'll rock and roll. So
I've never thought about doing sugar cubes. That's a smart idea.
Yeah, I've always ran sugar cubes when I go out. You can pick them up at pretty much any grocery store. Mm-hmm. But it's just I like to get a move on it. I like to get going. I don't like to kind of sit around and lollygag. You know, I want to be out glassing, you know, valleys and ridges and whatnot and mountainsides right off the rip. So
having and you don't want to have to wake up. You don't want to have to wake up an extra hour early just to make, you know, coffee.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm 100% an instant coffee guy. And even with the food, you know, you're talking about food as far as, you know, I do take freeze-dried stuff in there, but I always try to, when I pick a location that I'm going to set up and hunt in, I try to find a stream that's going to have fish in it. That way I at least got an option of food aside from, you know, the freeze-dried, you know, stuff mm-hmm. that I take out with me. And I've got a nice cast iron from Cabela's 12 deep. And the lid doubles down as, you know, basically a skillet as well. So I've kind of got two ways of cooking, you know, whether I'm cooking a big meal or if I'm just, you know, throwing something quick on there before I rack out for the night.
Yeah, that brings up a good point because I know, like, with what you were saying with the having a two-in-one or a multi-function equipment, like Spencer, your little Dutch oven is technically the lid of the Dutch oven is an actual cast iron skillet. And like the little Coleman, you know, because we all love our Coleman. Coleman's just an inexpensive, you know, good novice gear set for everything. And I have that little Coleman 4-in-1 portable grill, which literally is a Blackstone, a grill, an oven, and then a wok. The lid actually flips over and it turns into a wok bowl.
And oh, nice. Just to clarify, it's a griddle, not a Blackstone. It's a griddle top.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a Blackstone tomato, brand. Tomato, it's a Coleman, but it's a griddle and a grill and all the other things.
Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, potatoes, it's the same thing.
But no, I know that one that I've seen, especially, I know Billy's seen this a lot with our buddies when we were in the military in the field. I forget the name of it. What's that little, Spencer, you have something like it too, but it's the little bitty, little single burners. What brand was that?
Oh, I don't know. I literally just bought mine off of Amazon a long time ago.
Jet fuel, jet pack things.
Jet boils?
Yeah, jet boils.
The jet boils are nice.
Dude, we'd be out in the field, man, and Marines be popping their jet boils out to make their ramen noodles and stuff. But it was so funny.
All the time. Yep. All the time.
Yeah. I literally bought mine off Amazon for like $10. It just screws on the top of one of those 1 pound green propane bottles. And I could throw a coffee cup on there. I'll make coffee in the deer blind with one of those things.
You've done it that one time we were there.
Oh, yeah.
But no,
those are great for backpacking too, because they're super lightweight. They weigh like ounces.
Well, that's what the point I was going to bring up is if you're actually like what Billy was saying, if you're typically the one that's trying to push back very quick, very early into a unit or into a piece of property that you're hunting or even fishing, you're trying to get further upstream away from everybody else who's fishing. Those little bitty, everything you can fit in a backpack and kind of keep it light, dude, it comes in clutch.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, and my 100%. Wife bought me a really big, basically a big rucksack or a mountain pack. And dude, I can fit so much in there and I don't have to worry about taking a couple bags, smaller bags. Where, I mean, this thing is like massive. Like it's actually very similar to our rucks and that we had in the core where they're essentially, you know, you can pack down the bottom and then zip up halfway through it and basically create a second layer in there. And, you know, I can throw in all my clothes, hunting gear, you know, clothes wise that I need there on the bottom with, you know, the toiletry, so to say, you know, toothbrush, toothpaste, baby wipes. That's a big thing. I always take baby wipes with me. Get that field shower in.
Gotta get the field shower in, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But even on top, you know, after I zip that midway up, you know, that's where the tent goes and my little chair that I lug around with me, that'll go there. And, you know, some extras, cast iron, you know, double down in there. I got my ferro rod fire starters, you know, knives and game bags for the meat and whatnot. And then I can strap the bow, you know, right on top after I close everything up. She actually, just this year, she got me a, it's a mini hunting pack. But you can put a gun in that one. And then you can take small necessities with you there. You could probably cram some, a set of clothes in there and, you know, minimal stuff, smaller cast iron cookware and some game bags and a knife and whatnot. But the good thing about that, it's actually got the built-in rifle pouch or, you know, shotgun pouch.
Nice.
So, and that's another good little pack to have as well.
Yeah, especially if you're covering a lot of ground.
Oh, yeah. And I typically do. I mean, I was looking back at some of my routes that I walked whenever I was hunting Washington State, and there were multiple, you know, things up there from day to day. I was putting in, you know, anywhere from 8 to 14 miles a day. You know, granted, I was, you know, kind of quick glassing, you know, valleys and different ridges and mountainsides and whatnot, but 8 to 14 miles a day, and those little packs like that, they come in handy.
Oh, yeah.
That is one thing that people should probably keep in mind is the further you're going, like if you're hiking into the backcountry, whether it's to hunt or just to hike into the backcountry, travel light. The farther you go, the lighter you should travel because it's just more gear and more weight. And when it comes to packing, pro tip, put all your heavy stuff kind of down low. And then if you do have to put it up higher, put it closer to your back to keep your center of gravity closer to you. And it's not going to be bouncing around and swinging all over because that will just wear you down.
Oh, yeah.
I'll say one thing that I do. So I'll get the truck in as far as I can get my truck on whatever area that I'm going to hunt. And I'll actually set up my base camp there. So I'll have my big tent set up there and most of my gear gets up there. And then I have a little single man tent that actually folds down really, really small. Like honestly, compare it to one of those one subject notebooks that you can get from like the Dollar Tree. I mean, it'll fold down that small and I will run that out and I will go, you know, another 3-4 miles in and set up a little spike camp and then kind of bounce back and forth between those two when I need more gear. Cause I'll usually be out there for a week, 2 weeks at a time. You know, if I'm going on like a big elk hunt or blacktail hunt and I'll have my spike camp set up. And then when I'm kind of getting low on supplies, I'll run back to base camp, re-up after about 4 days or so, and then boom, boogie back out there. I mean, that's kind of a downside of having a small pack, but I'm not going to lug, you know, 60 pounds of gear, you know, 4 or 5 miles deep.
Yeah.
You could try.
If you don't want to carry a single person tent, honestly, one of those lightweight tarps can go a long way in just giving you some shelter. Because sometimes you're looking to do is just get out of either the rain, the wind, or the sun. And so sometimes just tying a tarp off to a tree and then tying it to a rock on the ground and throwing a tarp over it, that can get you a lot of relief from the elements. And it's super lightweight.
Oh, yeah. And those are, I mean, I even still carry a little tarp to these days.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have to have a tarp.
550 cord. Oh, my God. I cannot stress that. That one I cannot stress enough. 550 cord is your best friend out there.
Also known as paracord.
Or paracord, yep.
In layman's terms.
Yeah. I mean, you can use that to set your tarp up for a little makeshift mini tent. And you can use it to, if you're in bear country, like I was, you know, this past fall up in Maine, bear hunting, you can use that, you know, to kind of pull stuff up a tree and keep out of the reach of bears. Granted, black bears can climb, but if you find the right tree, you can kind of hang it out of reach, you know, so they kind of really can't get to it. Some of the smaller limbs that can withstand enough weight to hold, but it's not going to withstand a black bear 200-pound butt trying to shimmy across it.
But it's just handy for everything.
Oh, yeah. It really is.
Yeah. So I would say 550 cord or paracord is a must have, at least 50 feet.
At least.
You can buy that for a couple of bucks at pretty much anywhere store that's going to sell camping gear. Yeah. Yep.
So, guys, the most iconic thing in camping is obviously the campfire.
Yeah. 100%.
Agreed.
So I know, Billy, you mentioned
not camping without a campfire.
Right.
That's why they call it a campfire.
And I know, Billy, you mentioned your fire starters. What's your go-to for starting a fire? You going old flintlock or what you got going on?
Man, so it's essentially this ferro rod. It's essentially kind of a carbon flint, I believe is what it is. And it's got that striker tool, and I'll go shave, I'll find dry wood or even, and this is actually something that I've done for a while. The lint from the dryer, I will pull that out and use that to help start a fire. I have bags of that I have carried. You know, I'll carry 4 or 5 little Ziploc bags full of that stuff.
Yeah, so I do the I'll take the lint from the dryer and shove it in the old toilet paper rolls.
Yep.
That's a great fire starter.
I'm a little bougie. I already got the little fire biscuits.
Those are nice. They are nice.
Dude, I haven't tried those. I've thought about it, but I haven't done them yet.
Because even when they're wet, they work.
Yeah. They definitely do. Now, if you don't have those things, there's a term called kindling that you definitely want to research on how to do that. So what it is you are starting with a much smaller, tree debris, whether it be twigs, leaves, pieces of bark, moss,
dry grass,
something that it can easily be ignited. Now, a lot of people have what Billy was talking about is those magnesium rods. And then some people, of course, just have the good old, you know, lighter that you buy from your local gas station.
It's hard to beat. And you just, if someone judges you for that, they can shove it because they're just so stinking handy. And they're right so there. Small.
Yep.
Yeah. Like I carry my Gerber knife with the rod and the flint and all that, but I'm using a lighter 99% of the time.
Yep. And then getting into the campfire, I know one thing that I have learned is the type of wood that you use will depend on the temperature in which your fire can get to. For y'all that don't know, here in Texas, we have this beautiful tree that no one likes. It's called a cedar tree or a mountain juniper that burns extremely hot and it burns extremely fast. And of course we have our lovely live oak, which doesn't burn as hot, but by God, it will take forever to burn. So as far as getting your fire going, once you got your kindling lit and it's burning, what is y'all's like next step? Like, what do y'all like to typically do with your fires?
So once I get mine going, typically I will shoot for oak all day long and I carry an axe with me. It's full size axe and I will get my pieces of oak and I will fine chop some stuff trying to get the fire going steady with some of the smaller, finer pieces of oak before I start putting on, you know, a bigger log.
Yeah.
Once it kind of gets that temp where it's, you know, it's cooking, you know, good, fire's rolling good. And then I'll start adding on bigger pieces of oak after that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For y'all that don't know, if y'all can't carry a full size axe, y'all can literally go to like your local Walmart because Walmarts are everywhere. And buy yourself a little hatchet. A little hatchet just even comes in a long way too, especially when you're trying to break up a bigger piece of wood into smaller pieces because you need fuel. A fire is a living thing. I don't care what anyone says. It's a living thing and it needs fuel. And those smaller pieces of wood really do help out getting a fire nice and hot to help burn your larger pieces of wood.
Yeah. And make sure you're not going from like itty bitty kindling up to like a full size oak log. Fires need to be built incrementally. And so jumping from one step to the next is just not going to work out well for you in most cases. Sometimes you can get away with it. But yeah, start with your little kindling, your wood shavings. A lot of times when I'm building a fire out in the woods, I'll take my little knife and I'll just start shaving wood.
Mm-hmm.
And typically you're going to get, because especially if it's like rained, you can get that wet outer layer off. And then once you kind of get towards the middle of the stick, you're going to get drier stuff. And so I'll just start shaving stuff off. And then once it starts going, you can put like the whole stick, say like the size of your pinky or something. And then just keep building incrementally from there with larger and larger pieces. Don't think that you're going to go from kindling to putting a whole oak log on there. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. And kind of one thing I do, this kind of goes back to like my campsite. You know, like I say, I go near a stream. I will find bigger rocks and basically make a fire ring, because those rocks, obviously, once they get heated up, it's going to kind of bounce that heat back towards the fire itself. And I will build a rock fire ring, you know, probably eight inches to a foot tall.
Yep.
And use the heat, you know, kind of double dip essentially with the heat to kind of push back in the help. Even if you do have a little bit of wet stuff, the heat off that rock bouncing back in is going to help dry that out a little bit faster, so you can maintain a longer burn.
And it's also a good idea for safety. You want to be able to contain your fire to some degree. You don't want to just start a fire in an open field of grass. You want to kind of clear some bare ground so that you're not just burning, you know, an entire field. You want to kind of clear some bare ground, build you a little, some kind of fire ring, if it's just rocks or whatever. That way your fire's not just going to spread to everything.
Yeah.
And I'll usually dig like 6 inches deep too in the ground. Like I'll dig a little.
If you have the ability to do so, digging a pit's nice, but like where I'm at, you ain't digging a pit. That rock ring is what you need. Yeah. And the big thing for me with that rock ring, because I'm pretty sure all y'all have experienced this, wind is not your friend when trying to light a fire.
No.
Well, it can be, and it can also be your worst enemy. Yes.
Yep. So because it's nice to have that barrier to kind of break that wind. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Spencer taught me the fan trick. Spencer, you want to explain the fan trick that you like to do?
With a paper plate?
Oh, bro.
Yeah. Literally just, I take two paper plates and I'll stack them together so they're a little bit thicker. And that makes like the best fan in the world. And chances are you're going to have some kind of paper plate or just something rigid like that, that's larger, that's going to move some air. Because then if you build a fire pit and you don't have any like air gaps at the bottom, your fire is not going to get any air and it's not going to want to burn, even if it is dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting some oxygen in there is going to help your fire take off. For those of you who haven't studied fire science, you might want to watch a YouTube video. It'll help you build fires.
Oh, yeah. And there's so many out there. There's cool tricks with how to stack your logs, how to, you know, the TP method, the square Lincoln method.
Logs.
Yep, oh, the Lincoln logs. And then, or if you really want to cheat, because Spencer, you know, he's a man of many, many pieces of gear and learned a lot of stuff. You're a little DeWalt fan of yours, bro.
Oh, yeah, I cheat. Absolutely. It's either going to be my DeWalt blower or my DeWalt fan. And I'll just stick it right on there. I don't care. I'm old enough where I could cheat and I don't feel guilty about it.
But yeah, I know that a lot of people do know, but I know some people that are probably listening to this probably be their first time, but fire literally, it burns stuff, but its actual fuel is oxygen. So if you don't get air to it, it will go out. So you definitely got to make sure you got plenty of airflow, but obviously be smart. Don't be sitting there with nothing breaking the wind, because in Texas, the wind can change very quickly. And I know in PA, it can too.
Oh, yeah.
If you get a big enough, strong enough wind to blow that flame and it doesn't put the flame out, it will spread like crazy.
Well, and you have to watch your embers too.
Oh,
yeah. If you have a really lightweight material like leaves or grass, sometimes those embers will kind of float up out of the fire and they're still glowing red hot. And those can and do start wildfires.
Oh, yeah.
Rapidly burn out of control.
Well, do y'all remember the fire, I think it was in 2013 in Bastrop, Texas, that was actually caused by a campsite?
Oh, yeah.
It burned what, how many acres? 100-something thousand acres?
Yeah, it was bad.
And then it burned again in like 2015 from the same thing.
Yep. So just be cognizant of what you're doing with fires, guys. It's definitely something that will humble you if you are not careful.
And having a big fire looks cool, but it's not always practical or necessary.
I'm glad you brought that up. So fire size, what would be your ideal fire size, Spencer, as far as for your campfire?
Like a two and a half foot fire ring. And then shooting for like 12 to 18 inch logs. And I'm a TP guy, so I like my TP method. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stack those up. And so when they fall and they fall flat, they're not going to be much wider than 18 inches. That's the size fire I like.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about that is you can go buy a metal grate from like Lowe's or Home Depot, and you could just throw that over your fire ring and use that as your grill.
Oh, man, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. For roasted marshmallows, just grab you a couple of sticks and take your knife, sharpen the end of it, throw some hot dogs, marshmallows, whatever on there. And that can put out a lot of heat if you maintain it well without having, you know, this massive fire that's just going to burn out of control, especially if you do line it with the rocks. Once those rocks heat up, I mean, you can cook on those rocks because they will get hot.
Oh yeah, dude. I've done the fried eggs on the rock before. It's actually pretty cool.
Oh, steak on a limestone rock or granite rock is really good. You get that good sear, you can get a good crust on it. Yep. Top notch.
So what about you, Billy? What's your go-to size of fire that you have when you're out there in the good old mountains of Washington?
Man, so when I was out there, I was doing probably a 36 inch, like I would like go bare dirt in a 36 inch diameter, and then my actual fire ring itself was only 18 inches or in diameter, so, and I was running maybe a 12 inch log. I was keeping it real small, but you know, at the same time I had, you know, a bigger outer ring just to prevent, you know, that that heat from the rocks, because you know, with me having so many rocks that I use, making basically a 12 inch wall around it, I had, you know, an extra foot and a half outside of that that was all dirt to keep from catching stuff on fire.
Yeah.
And again, for those of you who haven't taken fire science, you want your fire ring to be probably about twice the size, maybe not quite that big, but you want it to be a little bit bigger than your fire itself. Because if your fire takes up that entire fire ring, that oxygen can't get down to the bottom of the fire to burn it. And so you're going to actually have more trouble maintaining your fire if it takes up your entire fire ring. So yeah, ideally you want just enough fire to do what you need to do. I mean, I've got a big 18 inch fire because we're typically cooking for 4, 5, 6, you know, guys.
Oh yeah. We get a full camp when we're out there.
Yeah. But if it's just like me or you out there, I mean, I could do a little 6-12 inch fire and just keep raking all your coals and everything back into the fire.
Yeah.
Because that's going to keep your fire nice and small, but super hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know about you, James, but I still have my e-tool from the military.
Good old e-tool, man.
I use that all the time because you can change the pitch angle of that shovel head, and I use that to rake stuff up and push stuff up and keep it in a contained pile.
Explain to us, layman, what an e-tool is.
So essentially,
the greatest thing ever invented.
100%. It's basically all it is, man, is it's a shovel that's no longer than, what do you say, James, maybe 18 inches in total length, maybe?
Maybe. It's not very long, and it's meant to fold up completely into, I mean, gosh, man, what, 8-inch by 8-inch square, so you can pack it away in a pack?
Yeah, and it's got, obviously, it's a mini shovel. It's got a serrated edge on it.
Yep, so you can use it as a knife.
Yep, and I believe it has the axe, like one portion of the blade is actually essentially an axe as well. So it's a great little tool to have. I mean, you can do anything with it essentially.
Yeah, it's definitely a survival tool for y'all that don't know. That's really what it is. And it gives you the ability to, especially, you know, in the backcountry, if you need to level out the ground, obviously you got the shovel use for it. When we're talking about earlier, when you're trying to create, you know, kindling, if you don't have any available, you know, like Spencer was saying, getting down below that wet bark on it, especially on the wet log, it's a multi-purpose tool. It's like the Swiss Army knife, but to me, a little bit more practical.
Yeah. And I mean, I keep mine in my truck at all times because you never know what situation you're going to run into, and having it there in the truck, I mean, it's just a one-stop shop for essentially everything as far as getting a fire going and getting kind of set up as far as that.
Yep. Any kind of tool that serves multiple purposes is a good thing to have.
comes in handy, like we're talking about with the cookware.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
So okay, on so that
we've
note,
we've kind of gotten down the rabbit hole. Let's get kind of back to what beginners, like what do we need for camping?
So
like,
obviously,
what else would you bring?
Obviously, like we're kind of talking about, you know, if you can view camping kind of like you can view, you know, view survival. You know, we talk about the tents, got to have shelter. You know, a fire, obviously, for heat, warmth, and the ability to cook. You know, because I don't care what anyone says, man, over the fire cooking is probably my favorite. Probably, I know you get pretty fancy with, you know, in the kitchen, but there's some good meals that you can make over the top of the fire. But the biggest thing that a lot of people forget, water source. Where are you going to get your hydration from? Camelbacks are a huge plus. I love the Camelback, especially when, like what Billy was saying, when you're pushing to that backcountry, you don't have to worry about it. It's already sitting there. Straws come to your shoulder. It will stay hydrated. Canteens are great.
Nalgene's.
Yep. Nalgene bottles. Spencer turned me on to these, especially if you're using it for your outdoor kitchen, is those 5 gallon, collapsible, water, almost like a water bucket kind of thing. You know, water retainer. I love those.
I like those. I've kind of, I don't know if you noticed last year, I kind of quit using those, mainly because most of mine leak now. But just going, when you go to the store, a lot of times they'll have like the 1 or 2 gallon, I think they're made for like the fridge, but they have a little spigot on it already. And so you just kind of slide it. And what I do is I'll set it right on the table with the spigot end hanging off. And it's really great for washing your hands because you can just open the tap and you got a little bit of running water. But you can fill water bottles with it. You can cook with it. And they're really handy to have if you're setting up like a dedicated campsite. If you're backpacking, probably not the way you want to go.
Yeah,
those are super convenient and they're dirt cheap.
I think hydration is the one that I think a lot of people overlook. And it's funny because
you have to have.
Yeah. Well, it's also hilarious because you get a lot of people that maybe not even do camping. They just want to go and hit like a state park or a nature preserve for the day. And you are surprised when they don't come with water.
Oh, yeah.
It's mind blowing.
As far as hydration, you know, especially like, you know, if you're out roughing it, they sell, and you can get these offline or probably at some stores, the REI store. I think I've seen them there as well. The portable water filter.
Yep.
If you get out, you know, somewhere and you so happen to either run out of water or your water source kind of gets damaged and let's say you got a backup or something or whatever, but you don't have clean drinkable water, you can get these water filters and they will, you essentially, whether you hand pump them, you can get some that are kind of like the Brita filter things you use in your house, and it'll filter out the water. And it may have kind of a grungy taste to them, depending on where you get your water from. But having that filter there is, you know, another good thing is to have as a backup as far as for hydration. That way you can still drink drinkable water, essentially.
Yeah, and technology has really improved that because there's so many different products that can purify water now. They have those big bags where you basically just scoop. I mean, you could scoop the nastiest pond water up in them. And I don't know what the chemical is in it, but they have like this powder in it. And so you scoop the bag up and you just hang it up for a while. And you can actually watch all the solids like basically float to the bottom. And it will purify it like 99%.
Yeah.
To where it even tastes good. I mean, it's incredible. Iodine tablets, if you're in a place where you have relatively clean drinking water, but you're worried about maybe some kind of bacteria or virus in the water, they're really handy. But water filtration is a really good option if you don't, especially if you're going to be out there for a while and you don't want to carry 5 gallons of water.
Yep. Or the primitive way of doing it, guys, is actually boil the water before you drink it. Put it on the fire, let it come to a boil, it'll kill any form of pathogens that are in it, and then you're just fine. It may not taste the best, but in a survival situation, you need it. You need water way more before you need food.
Yeah.
That is kind of one advantage. Going back to the coffee thing real quick, the pour over systems. I have a GSI pour over system and a little cup, and literally the little funnel thing just folds down into the cup. but pouring it through like a little coffee filter, especially if you can carry the paper ones, that's going to filter out a lot of your solids before you boil. And that's going to help with your taste as well. Plus, pour over coffee is pretty stinking good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So we got tents. We have cooking. We have, what else have we covered? Water.
We talked about food a little bit. Didn't go too deep. Yes. We did talk about food.
Yeah. So let's get into sleeping arrangements. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm a cot person. I've kind of gotten away from the sleeping bags as I've gotten older, and I kind of go more for just a couple of blankets now. But I will absolutely admit that I've reached the age where I'm bringing my own pillow. If I'm not way hiking way back into the backcountry, I'm bringing my pillow from home.
Oh, yeah. So I don't have the cot anymore. I used to be the cot guy. Obviously, even in the Marine Corps, we always had our cots. Yeah. I'm a big air mattress now. I got my air mattress, and that's what I do. That's my sleeping, but I'm still a sleeping bag. I definitely got the sleeping bag because especially on the cold nights, dude, it's a fail safe, man. Cause I'll find myself out from underneath the sheet so quick. So I like to move in my sleep. So a sleeping bag kind of keeps me nice and contained. And then it's worth
mentioning that different sleeping bags have different temperature ranges. So buy the one that you're going to need. So don't buy like sleeping bag that's rated for like 50 degrees if you're going to be camping, you know, when it's below freezing.
Yep.
It's not going to work for you, and you will be miserable and potentially get really sick.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then the one thing that I used to love so much, and I know Billy and I had this obviously in the military, is you had your three layers to your sleeping system. The outer layer is essentially almost like a personal tarp, but the one that we changed over to actually had the mosquito netting that you would zip up completely, still be able to breathe anything. We had to worry about bugs at night. But for y'all that actually rough it, not even in a shelter or a tent, mosquitoes and ticks are not fun, especially the mosquitoes.
They can ruin a trip real quick.
Easily ruin a trip.
And bug spray can only stand so much bug spray.
Yep, exactly. Now, as far as, because obviously we've dealt with extreme heat here in Texas. I know even in PA it can get pretty hot. I've heard, you know, getting up in the 90s up there in PA. As far as staying cool, what are y'all's guys' little go-to as far as trying to stay cool during those hot summer days? Because we have found ourselves camping, especially for hog hunting. For y'all know here in Texas, hog hunting is actually better in the summer. It's weird. It's just pigs love the heat. And you will find yourself sleeping when it's still 90 degrees outside.
I find the biggest, fattest, tallest oak tree that is popped out full on, and I will back my butt right up under that tree. Into the shade.
Shade is your friend.
Yep.
The breeze is your friend.
The battery operated fans are your friend.
Well, yeah, they're really, if you've got one, they're really your friend.
Oh, yeah, man.
And even those little Mr. fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Mr. fans are the way to go, man.
Oh, even the paper, like the same way I do a fire, grab a couple of paper plates, just fan yourself if you got nothing else. Air movement is really going to help, especially. And the other thing I wanted to mention is cooling clothes. Again, technology has really helped us in the outdoors a lot. Those cooling clothes really do make a huge difference. And I'm not brand name specific. I've got all different brands. But they really do help. They're going to help wick away your moisture, which is going to be your sweat. And they're going to help you keep drier and cooler.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I think.
And contrary to a lot of people's belief, long pants and long sleeves are also your friend.
Oh, yeah. Sunburn's a real thing, and it's a real pain if you get it.
Yeah. Keeping the sun off of your skin is not only going to help prevent sunburn, but it's going to help prevent your skin and your body from heating up as much.
Yeah. Long sleeve clothing in the winter is definitely helps. Yeah. Hats for sure. You know, it does get uncomfortable because like myself, you know, I sweat profusely and it happens very quick. But no, one thing too is, when dealing with extreme heat, is obviously making sure you stay hydrated. But a real cool trick that I learned in being in Africa, which is worst place I've ever been in my life as far as the heat, it was ungodly hot, is taking your water source, whether it's a water bottle, whether you have an IG bottle or whatever you got, and taking like a sock and actually taking that hot water and pour it all over that sock, put your water source into that wet sock and put it in the shade. And I'm telling you, it will drop the temperature of that water completely, even if it's still 130 degrees outside like it was in Africa.
Yep.
Because drinking hot water is not fun.
No.
Yeah, not at all.
There's nothing worse than like being out when it's 100 plus degrees and just drinking hot water.
Oh, man. It's the worst. Miserable. It's the worst. And then like Spencer and I touched on earlier, counter opposite, because I know we're getting a little pressed on time, is dealing with the extreme colds. Because even when the temperature is not freezing, that wind chill for y'all, even for y'all that ride motorcycles, y'all are very well aware of the wind chill. Yeah. It will cut through your clothing. It'll cut through your shelter. It is brutal. Mm. So Spencer, what is your, I guess, battle when dealing with the extreme cold as far as camping?
So whether it's camping or whether I'm on my motorcycle, it's layers and different types of clothing for different layers. So for my base layer, I'm always running some kind of like lightweight, breathable, moisture wicking fabric. Mm-hmm. For my mid layer, I'll go something kind of, if it's really cold, I'll go something like maybe a fleece jacket or some blue jeans. And then especially if you're going to be fighting wind, get you some kind of hard shell windbreaker jacket, something to help cut that wind at the outermost layer, because that's going to help keep your body heat inside those layers.
Oh yeah, dude.
You absolutely layer up.
Yep. Get the good old long johns, I like to call them. Those undergarments come in clutch. And the wool socks. Get yourself some nice wool socks.
Especially if you go merino wool, it's going to help keep the moisture down and the smell down.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing worse than being outside and then wearing too many layers and starting to sweat. And then those wet clothes just start to get cold. That's the worst. And waterproof your boots.
Hey, Billy, how many times have you been told to change your socks?
Quite a few.
Yep. When you're camping, socks and underwear go an incredibly long way when they're fresh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I would rather have like two pairs of pants. If I'm going to be out for a week, I can do two pairs of pants, but I'm packing clean socks and underwear. A lot of times, two pairs for every day.
Yep.
And I can wear the same pants all week. I don't care at that point. I'm not going to be the guy who, like, I'll wear my underwear one day and then I'll flip it inside out the next day. No, I'm not doing that. I want fresh, clean every day. That's just one of my simple luxuries.
I'm 100%. You know, you kind of touch on layers. I still have my silk layers, base layers from military. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, depending on where exactly I'm at, I actually have two pair of the Carhartt insulated jeans that I will throw over on top of those. And then my hunting pants there, you know, usually at that point, I'm just going to take my lightweight hunting pants and just throw on over the top of the insulated Carhartts and roll that way. But dude,
Carhartts are awesome. I love Carhartts stuff. It really does. And they last too.
We all love Carhartts.
Even when I duck hunt, I mean, for those duck hunters out there, they know this. I mean, it just duck hunting, dead of winter, cold as hell, ice, you know, snow, depending on where you're at.
And you're in the water.
Yeah, you're in the water. Mm-hmm. And like, I have some real nice insulated waders, and I will wear those Carhartt insulated jeans underneath my waders. You know, most people, they'll put on a couple different base layer type stuff and then their waders. Nope, not me. I'm straight freaking Carhartt insulated jeans right in there. Yep. You know, I got my thermal wear socks. And those, you know, I'll wear those too. But dude, them Carhartt insulated jeans inside of waders, and the amount of body heat that those things hold in and push up, because obviously heat rises. And I'll wear just a hoodie and then my outer layer, you know, a thick hunting, my duck hunting jacket. and then topped with the life jacket, because I don't take that thing off out there. You know, if I fall, I want to float and be able to just shed those waders immediately. But,
yep.
Dude, I ain't going to lie. Them Carhartt jeans, pushing that heat up through the jacket in there in the duck boat or in the duck blind, dude, I have passed out cold, just straight taking that duck hunting, man. I'll be sitting there and knock the hell out, man, and all of a sudden my buddies are ripping away on a shotgun. I'm like, oh, crap, what I miss?
Yeah, and it is worth noting that there are a lot of alternatives to Carhartt, the Carhartt brand.
Oh, yeah.
Because Carhartt's expensive. But I think we can all agree that if you can afford it, we're all buying Carhartt, right?
Do it. Oh, 100%. Definitely do it.
It's tried and true. It's the proven. It is the go-to for a reason.
Yep.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't
know the brands that I liked, but I'm always, at this point, I'm buying Carhartt every time.
Yeah. Yep. And I don't skimp. I don't go, you know, for the off-brand Carhartt, essentially. I go straight Carhartt all day long, 100%. I don't care how much it costs me. That's the route I'm going at the end of the day, no matter what.
And I will say that just the past couple of years, I've never been a vest guy, but I got a Carhartt vest a couple of years ago, and those things are so versatile.
The vests are the best. I love, no pun intended, but the vests are awesome.
Because they're going to help keep that your core warm. And your internal organs and all the things you need to keep your body moving, it's going to keep those warm, but you can still, I mean, it's not going to heat up your entire body or even your entire upper half. So you can kind of stay warm without getting too hot.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to have. I mean, you just, you can't go wrong with it.
Yeah.
I mean,
so we have clothing. The match whatever clothing to whatever environment you're going to be in, particularly temperature and or rain.
Yep.
We got
tents. Always carry rain gear. Always carry rain gear. Whether there's no rain in the forecast or not, take it, because it almost comes regardless.
The weather can change. Yeah.
Even if it's just one of those like $1 cheap ponchos. If you're out there and there's no rain in the forecast, those things are like the size of a deck of cards. They pack away real easy and they can prevent your day from being ruined.
Oh yeah.
So clothing, we've got tents, cookware, sleeping arrangements. What else do we need for a beginner's camping excursion?
Shoes, footwear.
Shoes are a good one. What are you riding, Billy?
Depending on the type of terrain you're in, I'm not going to say that, you know, obviously, you know, most people starting out are probably going to go to kind of a pre-built campsite in a way where, you know, the ground's leveled out. They keep it kind of nice and tidy and cleaned up there. But once you get, you know, more experience, you know, whether they write this down or take a mental note of it, you know, the further they decide to get in their camping career, so to say. Footwear is a big thing. Kennetrek, really good footwear company. You can get boots. They got hiking style shoes, lightweight style shoes. Honestly, though, I kind of revert back to my military days, and I go with the Bellevue combat boots that I used to wear. I usually get a pair every couple of years just because of how much ground I cover and wear the tread out. But that's me. During the winter, you know, I got, whether it be lacrosse, my lacrosse hunting boots, which have really good grip on them, or I'm actually trying out a new brand right now. Well, new to me, they've been out for a little bit, but Dry Shod. They have insulated boots with really good tread, and so far they seem to hold up well. But if you're just kind of looking to get a good pair of shoes, look into Kennetrek. That's a good footwear to go with there that I found.
So I think regardless of brand, if you're going to be hiking on off of pavement, I think we can agree lace up and 100%. At least ankle high, if not higher
than ankle. Well, in my personal opinion, higher than ankle, because you'd be surprised how often you will roll an ankle on a rock.
And
that could put you out of the count
a very
quick
big rock.
It doesn't. Nope. Some uneven ground is going to take those ankles out with the quickness.
Yeah. So for me, I'm rocking the Keen lace up boots. for those who don't know, I have a construction company, and I'm always on the job site. I'm always working. And these boots, they're what, $120, I think, maybe $150. I can wear them all day on the job site, and I can take them out into the woods and not have to worry about rolling my ankle or staying warm or staying dry. But I will say, when it comes to footwear, if you're going to be out in the wet, which if you're going to be outside at some point, you are going to be out in the wet, keep them waterproofed, because wet shoes will ruin your whole day.
Oh, yeah.
And they are hard to dry out, especially depending on the material.
Yeah, I rock the good old Danners. I spent the money for them, but
nice.
Danner boots is what I rock, and they are extremely comfortable. For y'all that don't know, y'all put on a bad pair of boots or a bad pair of shoes, it can actually make your day miserable, because your feet just hurt and ache the whole time.
Yeah. If you're going to a state park and you're just going to be hanging out around the campsite, wear whatever shoes are comfortable, wear your Hey Dudes if that's what you want. But if you're going to be out in the backcountry or you're going to be hiking, get you a good pair of high lace-up boots.
Yep. Yeah.
Spend the money. I would say spend the money on footwear before pretty much anything else if you're going to buy a quality piece of equipment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's like, when I'm around my, whether I'm at my little spike camp or I'm at my main base camp, when I'm right there in the camp area, yeah, I got my Bellevue boots or my little Kinetrek, just over the ankle shoes or whatever. But when I get going, like I said, there for a while, I was rocking lacrosse, 18-inch, full waterproof insulated boots. Like now I'm trying the dry shod boots, and they're insulated, full waterproof. They've got the strap on the back that cinches down around the back, around your leg, and it latches down. And, that's kind of where I'm at with my footwear. So
make sure you have shelter. Make sure you have food, water,
fire,
good clothes. Well, yep. good shoes and multiple layers of clothes. If you got that, you can pretty much go camp anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go to your state park and you can go out into the, BLM land if you've got that. Not that we have a lot of that here in Texas. But yeah, you can do a lot with just minimal equipment.
Oh yeah. And then
you don't have to be like me and have all the cool fancy toys and gadgets.
Yeah. I'm a very minimalist. I'm a minimalist guy. I take very little stuff, mostly just the necessities. And
yeah, it is worth pointing out that human beings have survived for thousands and thousands and thousands of years without Bic lighters and all the creature comforts that we have now.
Yep, that's how we got here today. It's got to start somewhere. And they literally started from rock bottom.
Yeah, literally. All right. Well, I think that's a good camping starter. Obviously, we all like camping. We're going to get into it more later in the podcast. But do what?
Big Bend. That's on my list. I'm actually looking at it right now on the computer. And it's funny how
West Texas for sure.
Yep. It's funny how you were talking about that. So for y'all folks don't know, I'm literally on the TexasParksAndWildlife.com. All right. Technically it's and just real quick, like these are just park rules that the state requires across the state. And Texas is a very large state, a lot of different terrain. Firewood, and literally talking about the campfires, must have a fire ring. So for y'all that don't know, here in the state of Texas, we were talking about that earlier. You got to have one if you're going to have a fire out there when you're on the state parks.
And if there's a burn ban, you actually have to have a separate fire container. So what we used to do is when there was a burn ban, you can't have a ground fire. So we went to Walmart and bought one of those, like the cheapest $30 grill that you can buy. And you can actually have a bonfire in that, but you can't have it on the ground when there's a burn ban.
Yep.
Yep.
So,
and then the good thing about it, and we did not talk about this, and I feel like this would be something we should add real quick, before we close this one out, is my favorite thing, which people call me the, Tejano Dundee over here, is snakes. Snakes is actually here in bold on their park rules and websites saying, strictly don't be afraid of snakes, be aware. There are signs in healthy environment. Obviously, if you cross their path, back away slowly. Because for y'all that don't know, snakes are a real thing, especially here in Texas. We have all the venomous snakes you can come from. Even in Pennsylvania, you got timber rattlers. You got plenty of them up there. The number one way you get bit by a snake is because you mess with it. So yeah. When you're out there, just let it do its thing. It's wildlife. And it's funny because even stay right here on wildlife. Keep wildlife wild. Do not feed or harass wildlife. Don't mess with the animals, man. Just leave them alone. Yep. Take photos. Keep a distance. You'll be fine.
Yep, I agree. One last thing I do want to point out, speaking since you're on the website, is wherever you're going to go camp, go to their website and read the rules. Because we were talking about, you know, building fires. In most, I think in all Texas state parks, you cannot collect your own firewood. So bring your own firewood if you want. But yeah, just as a general rule, get online, read the rules and regulations, and then prepare accordingly.
Yep. And it's funny that you say that because I'm looking at it right here. The last statement on it. Please do not gather firewood.
Yep. Yeah. And
most, why people? Because snakes live in fire pile. Or not fire piles, wood piles.
Yeah. And most state parks will sell firewood, but it's not cheap and it does sell out pretty quickly.
Yep.
But, you know, grocery stores around wherever you're going to be camping, they know that and they're going to sell, you know, little bundles of firewood. But if you can bring some from home, that's going to be even easier for you most of the time.
But no, if you go out to a state park, guys, I know like Spencer and I, we really love Enchanted Rock here in Texas. Yep. Is they're going to have a ranger station of sorts. They're going to have staff at that park. If you have any questions or just like honestly just want to make sure you brought everything you need to bring, always call them. They're out there. That's their job, is to assist you. Just give them a call. Check in with them to say, hey, I want to come out here and stay a couple of days. What should I bring? And they will tell you, because that's what they do.
So, and what not to bring.
Yeah, exactly.
Including firearms in most areas.
All right,
and
guys.
Alcohol. And I know at least in state parks, you can't have alcohol.
No.
So if you're planning on going out to a state park and getting lit, think again, because trust me, you will get in trouble.
Yeah. And no pun intended, guys, alcohol and campfires don't mix, because you will get lit, but in two different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to be the next headline in the newspaper the next day.
Dude, yeah. The worst burn I have ever seen, and this is staying on the topic of the fire, is in high school. We had a buddy of mine that was, you know, drinking, got a little tipsy. He tripped and went hands first into the bonfire.
Oh, yeah.
It was the largest blisters I've ever seen in my life. It was horrifying. So even if you can, guys,
on multiple occasions.
Yep. Guys, even if you can drink, you know, like, you know, I've been lucky enough to have family that has property. So obviously I can drink out there. Just be smart about it. If you're going to have a fire going, or you can have, especially if you got firearms around too, just be mindful of what you got around you when you start putting the liquid courage in your bellies.
Yeah, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yep, 100%.
Please drink responsibly.
Yep.
All right, so next week we're going to be talking about more outdoor stuff. So if people want to hear that, Billy, what should they do?
Well, I think the one thing that you ought to do, tune in to Get Out.
Attaboy.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of which, real quick, what are we going to talk about next week? Y'all got any ideas? What are y'all doing right now? What's going on in the world?
Well, for me, turkey kicks off this Saturday. So I'm going to be chasing thunder chickens for the next month.
Yep. Yep. James, I know you're looking to do some ranch work, some property maintenance.
A lot of wildlife, I would say more habitat management for sure. Definitely going to be handling the hill country nightmare called the cedar trees. Trying to get more native grasses to grow and take out a nice little section as I can. And then getting water out there, because for y'all that don't know, Texas is in a major drought. And just like we need water, so do the animals. So actually going to be starting a few artificial ponds, you know, some man-made water structures. So that's going to be the next thing on my list to do.
I don't think we've been out of a drought since like 2012.
Yeah. 2015, actually. That was a year it rained a ton.
Yep.
And my garden's starting to come in. I'm starting to get some vegetables. I had some fresh green beans today. My zucchinis are coming in looking nice. I have some things that are lagging, like the tomatoes. I don't know why they're not producing yet. Probably because I haven't put any nitrogen on them. But we'll get into that later.
Oh, definitely, right, man.
Well, we'll see you same time next week.
Yeah.
Adios, gentlemen.
Later.